Thank you.
There you go, bud.
My name's Al. I'm an alcoholic. What it was like, what happened was, like now. I spoke a couple of months ago and ran off at the mouth for, about my drunkalogs. I'll try to cut that part short. I didn't come here because I drank too many ice cream sodas, I can tell you that. I thought I was all right. I come from a family, you know, a decent family. I was the youngest one, the only alcoholic, and I was the brightest one. I was the one they thought was, I was going to be the first Frederick to go to college. Instead, I became the first Frederick to go to jail, you know. From the time I started drinking, I had trouble with it, and I never recognized the trouble. I guess because I started young, I just thought, that's life, you know. People get arrested for things, and, you know. They get drunk and they do stupid things, or they black out, and I always did it, and I just never thought nothing about it. So I came into AA when I was 31, and I didn't think there was anything wrong with my drinking. I knew there was something wrong with me. I knew I was nuts, but I didn't think it was the booze. The booze seemed to be the only thing that gave me any relief from my craziness, you know? I was crazier in between drunks than I was when I was drinking. I had a wife and five kids when I come into AA. I was 31 years old, so it shows you how crazy I was, and how crazy she was for marrying me. But I did all the normal things. I went in the Army. I spent 3 years in the Army, and in the Army I learned other tricks. I learned how to drink rubbing alcohol and all kinds of good stuff, you know. When my drinking days were over, you know, Dennis mentioned the bars in Long Island. My claim to fame was I knocked out this bar owner in Bayshore. Her name was Louise. And I was so proud of that because she was a tough son of a bitch. But that was one of my arrests. But I just went from one thing to another. I used to say when I was new in the program that I was like a leaf that was just blowing around in the wind, you know. And every now and then I'd get stuck in a puddle for a while and I'd be normal. And then it'd dry up and off I'd go again. I didn't know why. I used to lay in my car at night after the bars closed and I'd cry. Oh man, I cried a lot when I was a drunk. And I'd say, what the hell's the matter with me? Why don't I go home, you know? I used to celebrate Tuesday every year because it came around every week, you know? I liked that day. And I'd say, I went to work on Tuesday and here it is Friday and I ain't been home yet, you know? And I didn't know why. I loved my wife, I loved my kids, but I just couldn't get out of it. I used to work, my wife said to me one time, why is it other people are off weekends and holidays? You're off all week and you work weekends and holidays, you know? And I hated family get-togethers. She used to invite her mother over and stuff like that. And I always felt ashamed and guilty, so I made a point to have work for the weekend. And I get screwed up on a weekend, I couldn't work for the week, you know? So, I'm a plumber by trade. I lived in a neighborhood that was two blocks from Central Islip State Hospital and a mental hospital. And that place, most of my neighbors either worked there or they were on welfare. And it wasn't a very good paying job. I was a master plumber, I had my own business, and I had less than anybody in the neighborhood, you know? I'd sign a contract with somebody, get a deposit, and then they'd have to chase me for a month because I'd spend the money right away. I couldn't get the material to get started. And I was always under the gun. Well, one night I came home. I hadn't been home for a week, and it was like 3 o'clock in the morning. I think it was a Thursday night. And my wife was sleeping, naturally. See, I had a way of, to prevent arguments, I'd come in drunk 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning and say, anybody for sex? And I'd never hear nothing, you know? Got very quiet in the house, so I knew it was safe to come in. So I'd go to sleep on a couch, and I slept there that night. It was like 3 in the morning, and I slept there till about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Finally, my wife woke me up and said, you want a cup of coffee? And I said, yeah. And the fact that she was talking to me was amazing, you know, and offering me coffee. So she was being very nice to me. I didn't know she went to Al-Anon, the underground, you know, and they taught her how to how to handle me, you know? So she gave me a cup of coffee and she says, we got to talk. And she did all the talking. And she said, I think you got a problem with alcohol. And I said, yeah, I think so too. Yeah, and anything to keep her talking, you know? I no more thought I had a problem with alcohol. I had a problem with everything else but alcohol. That was my relaxing time, you know? And I relaxed like a maniac. But anyway, she said, do you want some help? And I said, who's going to lend me $10,000? That's the way I thought, you know, I was in another world. And she said, no, I mean, help with your drinking. I said, yeah, okay. So she said, there's a place called Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, yeah, I heard of them. I heard of them, but I had no idea what it was all about. So she said, would you go to it? And I said, yeah, give them a call. And she said, I ain't going to give them a call. You want to go, you're going to call. So I never did anything for myself. She did everything for me. So I had a call, and the young lady answered, intergroup in New York. There was only one intergroup then in New York anyway. And I lived out in Suffolk County, Long Island. And she told me the only group she knew of was in Sayville, and it was in a St. Francis Catholic Church or something. And I said, okay. And I figured that's out. I ain't going to church. I'll go to AA, but I ain't going to church too, you know? So she told me to look in the paper. There's other groups. So Monday, this was on a Saturday morning that we had this, when I called into group. So I found out there was a church in Babylon, which was the next town from me. And it's amazing. This is what, these kind of things happen to me. That, you know, they talk about miracles or coincidences. The address of the Babylon group was 17 Mansfield Road, or Mansfield Place, I forget which now. And I know people that lived all their life in Babylon didn't know where Mansfield Place was, but I knew where it was. I woke up one morning in my car in front of a diner, and I didn't know where the hell I was, and I got out and looked at the sign that said Mansfield Place. This was about maybe a month before I come to AA. So that was one of the coincidences. So I went in there, and that night, I spent 3 days preparing to go to my meeting. I didn't want to look like no alcoholic, you know. And so I went and bought me a whole new wardrobe at John's Bargain Store, and I spent $7, and that was all I had. And so I, you know, it was March of 1964, and it was cold as hell, and I had a pair of pants that I bought at John's Bargain Store for about $3, and you know how warm they were. I had no socks. I had a white T-shirt and a little jacket with a zipper on the front that wasn't very warm either. But that was the way I went to my first meeting because I didn't want to look like no alcoholic, you know. So, people told me later, I seen you when you came in, man, you were a mess, you know. But I went to this meeting. It was an open meeting. It was a speaker meeting. They had three speakers, a leader and two speakers. And I didn't expect to like the AA because I didn't like people who didn't drink. And I found out all these people don't drink, except for one. The guy that greeted me when I walked in, he shook my hand. He says, give this a try, kid. It really works. And he reeked of alcohol. And so I trusted him. You know, he smelled right. So he died 9 months later. His liver let go. But so I sat down, I listened, and one guy, the leader, was on the Bowery for 9 years, and I identified with him. I wasn't on the Bowery for 9 years, but I identified with his thinking. The next guy was in 43 mental institutions. I was never in a mental institution, but I identified with him too. I thought just like him too. And the third guy was just like me. He was just a, you know, family drunk, you know, pushed his wife around once in a while and got in trouble. And got arrested for a few things, and so I thought, Jesus, you know, I knew it. I bought it, hook, line, and sinker. I'm an alcoholic, but, you know. So I went home that night, and I told my wife, I didn't mention, but she had a court order that I had to be out of the house by next Thursday. You know, and this was on Monday. So I told her this is what I've been looking for my whole life. And I was being honest with her. I really felt that way. I remember telling her when I was a kid, when we were going together. We went together since she was 14 and I was 17. And I told her, there's something wrong with me. I don't know what the hell it is, but I just feel like I'm lacking something. I don't know what. And what was bothering me then was every time things would go good, they'd get screwed up again because I'd get drunk. But I never connected it with the drinking. And I did an awful lot. I joined the Army out of fear. I committed some kind of crime. And I was afraid the guy would recognize me, you know. And I lived in New York. There's, you know, what was it, 9 million people in New York or something. And I figured he'd pick me out of a crowd, you know. And I remembered his face, and I figured he'd remember mine. So I joined the Army to get the hell out of town. I spent 3 years of hell for this one thing. I never got caught for it, but I paid for it. Like I said, in the Army, I drank rum and alcohol. I didn't change at all. I thought I'd you know, things would get better. I'd start acting different, but I didn't. I was just as bad or worse. So I told her this is what I've been looking for my whole life, and she said, "You got to do it for yourself." And I said, "I know." I said, "They told me, you know." She said, "Well, I wish you'd do it for yourself someplace else. I don't want you drunk or sober." So, well, I went there for her, and it didn't work. You know, but I did stay sober. That worked, and that was the important thing. In the beginning, AA was a lot different than it is now. It was very simple, you know. They told me to get stupid. Everybody else outside was telling me to wise up, you know. And they told me to get stupid. I mean, these people are right, you know. They must think I know something, you know. So I got stupid, and I stayed stupid. That's why I'm still sober. I used to know everything before I came into AA. Then I got stupid, and it works. So I met a guy who knew me, but I didn't know him. I met him in a bar one time, but I don't remember ever meeting him. And something about him I liked. He seems to have all the answers for me. And he was sober forever, you know. He was sober 5 months, you know. And I think this guy got to be my sponsor. So I asked him, and he said, "Yeah, all right, I'll be your sponsor." So he said, "Here's my phone number. If you need anything, call me." So I write down my phone number, I give him that, and I said, he says, "What the hell's that?" I said, "That's my phone number." He said, "What the hell am I going to do with that? I ain't got to call you." it was tough love. I could call him any time of the day or night, but he would never call me. And until later on when he found out I was going to stick around a while. But he's in Sarasota now. He celebrated 50 years in October, you know, last October. And so I hung around. I did what he told me to do, and strange things happen. I mean, you know, my thinking was so wacky. I didn't know what was going on in AA. What, you know, I didn't know what are they, all crazy, or they, you know, what the hell kind of people are they? Well, Andy took me to a meeting one afternoon. There's very few afternoon meetings then, and it was in Cold Springs Harbor, Huntington, and it was up in the woods. And we got in the car, and we're driving around trees and everything, a dirt road. And I'm thinking, where the hell is this guy taking me? Who the hell is this guy, you know? Maybe he's going to rob me. I had 35 cents in my pocket. I'm worried about getting robbed. And then I thought, well, maybe he's a pervert or something, you know? And then I thought, oh, shit, I haven't had sex in so long. How big would it be? So he wasn't neither one. So he was an alcoholic, and he, you know, he talked some good stuff to me. And I said, how many meetings a week do you make? And he says, I go every night. I said, oh, come on, I don't go every night. I can't go every night. I'm a plumber. I work hard. I'm tired at the end of the day. I hadn't worked in years, you know. But I know I'd be tired if I worked. You know? So he says, well, look, you asked me, I told you. He says, I'm not going to tell you what you got to do. This is what I got to do. He told me what meetings he goes to. And I didn't believe him. So I followed around. I went to the meetings that he told me about, and sure as hell, he was there, you know? So this guy wasn't lying to me. So I did what he did. I noticed when at open meetings, there were big meetings, he'd be around talking to everybody. He knew everybody. And I wonder, what the hell is he talking about, you know? So I used to follow around to listen to him, to see what he was talking about. And he was asking the people, how you doing? How's your husband? How's your wife? You know, and I never cared about anybody else's husband or wife, you know? Then he told me that he said, if you want to stay sober, you got to speak. You got to go to a meeting and speak. I said, no way. With my language, I could never get in a mixed crowd like this, and you know, I'd be thrown out. You know, So he says, don't worry about it. They've got meetings for everybody. So he took me to Nassau County Jail to speak when I had 90 days. And I didn't have to worry about my language, you know. But I was very nervous. He said, what are you nervous about? He says, these guys, you're getting out of here tonight. They're not. So don't be nervous, you know. So I got into speaking, and I got so much out of it. I really did. I never thought about it, and I try very hard when I know I'm going to speak, not to even think about it until I get up here. And that's what happened again tonight. And it usually works out better. The night I spoke here last time, I thought about it beforehand, what I'm going to say. I didn't say anything I planned on saying, but I bored everybody to death, you know. So I talked too long. So anyway, I'll tell you about some of my first meetings. There was a guy that was in the room when I first came in. I used to say, an alcoholic is a shaky little old man. I'm not like that. Well, this shaky little old man, and we used to call him Shaky Bill. He said he'd be my sponsor until I found somebody, you know, that I could identify with more. So he said, I'm running a meeting in Pilgrim State Hospital. Why don't you come over there Saturday night, 7 o'clock. So he gives me directions how to get there. And the genius, you know, I didn't have to write nothing down because I know everything, you know. And so I went to Pilgrim State. I had it all figured out. Just drive into Pilgrim State, ask where the meeting is, and I'll go there, you know. I knew what Pilgrim State Hospital was. So I go in there. It's a nut house. Everything's locked, you know. So, holy crap, how am I going to find Shaky? And he told me the name of the group, and I forgot. The name of the group was Duffy's Tavern, but I forgot that. So I went to the administration building. I knocked on the door, and the big door opens up, and the guy says, I said, where's the AA meeting? And he says, which one do you want? There's 7 of them here, you know. Oh, shit, I don't know. So he takes me to the meeting that was in that building. And it's a locked ward. I go in there, and they lock the door behind me. I start panicking. I think, how am I going to get out of here? Who's going to vouch for me that I don't belong here, you know? And I seen one person at that meeting. She was chairing it or something, and one of the founders of the group that I belong to. And I knew Hubbard. I don't know whether she knew me, you know. So I sat there while they opened the meeting and started talking. Then all of a sudden, the door opened up, and a guy came in with coffee, and I went out. I figured, let me try it, you know. And as long as I got out through the door, I didn't stop. I kept going. And that was my first experience with the Nut House meetings. The second experience was a couple of years later. I spoke at one of them, and I said to try to get a discussion going. And this was another bad ward. I mean, they were locked in, you know, they were all on Thorazine. They shuffled around and played with each other under the table and stuff. They weren't paying no attention to me. And so when I got done telling my tale of woe, I said, anybody got any questions? And a guy told me, don't expect them to ask any questions, because nobody talks in the meetings. This guy raises his hand. I said, oh man, that must be good, you know. I got him asking questions, he's interested. I said, yes, so what can I, what do you want? He says, you the guy with the cookies? So that's how I impressed him, you know. So we used to speak a lot, we used to go out a lot. One of the guys I used to go travel with a lot was a guy by the name of Joe. He was Jewish, and his mother told him, nice Jewish boys don't drink like you. So he became an Italian, you know, and all the way. I mean, he became a prize fighter, a tile setter. You know, he did all the trowel trades union, went a roll Italian. And he said, I'd be sitting in the bar and somebody say, Jew bastard. And he says, I wouldn't bat an eye, but they'd say Guinea, I'd kill him. You know, he had a habit of throwing people in the dumpsters, you know. And, he's in Largo right now. He celebrated in May, 50 years. So there's hope for all of us because, you know, we're all nuts. And like my sponsor said, there's all kinds of nuts in AA. We've got a wrench to fit everyone. Well, he sure had the wrench to fit me. I never doubted my alcoholism from the day I walked into AA. I knew, my life flashed before me. Like, and it was so obvious. I don't know how I missed it. So AA has been very good to me. First thing before I spoke, let me go back a little ways. One night my wife accused me of having a girlfriend. She said, you don't stay out 3 or 4 nights just for booze. I said, I was in the car all the time alone. She said, nobody stays out just like that. And I'm, like I said, I'm a plumber, and I was working there. And she took a second look at me, and she says, nah, you haven't got a girlfriend. Nobody wants you, you know? And, well, when I came into AA, it was worse, you know? And so I never had a problem with the women. And sober less than 90 days, so I was sober about a month. And I was ashamed of not having any teeth, you know? So that's part of the reason why I didn't have any problem with the women. And some guy in my group says, you ought to get teeth. I said, I ain't got no money for that. He said, I got a guy that'll make them for you, $65. So the guy made me teeth in his garage for $65. And it was beautiful, the bridge in the front. And I never had to have them adjusted. I wore them for about 16 years, you know? But now I'm sober, and I'm going to AA meetings, and there's a lot of pretty women there, and I'm clean. I'm not smelling so bad like I used to. And I got teeth, you know? So I started smiling at the girls, and the girls started smiling back. And I got involved with one. We became friends. For 7 years, we were friends before it turned into anything. And I ended up, I did get back with my wife, but that ended it. She found out about it. And if I don't have something to screw me up, I'll find something, you know? And that's, you know, I wasn't, you know, chasing women all my life when I was drinking, but as soon as I got sober, I started looking at the women. So I got divorced after 7 years of sobriety. I had six kids by that time. And so here I am. When I was going with this girl, before we got intimate, like you say, I wanted to marry her, but I didn't want to lose my wife, you know? So I was still nuts. So I'm trying to figure out, instead of saying, you know, telling my sponsor about it and asking other people what you think I should do, I figured it out for myself, and I was trying to figure out how I was going to support two wives and 11 kids. You know, she had five and I had six, and I didn't have to worry about them. One night out with this girl, and my wife knew that something was wrong after all, you know, we were married then about 18 years, and she told me she wanted a divorce, and we split up. I didn't fight it too much because, first of all, she said, she was going to sue me for adultery and use the other girl, you know, as the co-respondent. And I didn't want to screw up her life. I screwed up my own. So, and she didn't want to screw up her life either. So she was smart enough to get rid of me. So that ended that. And I found out, looking back at it, that kind of retarded my growth, you know, the way I was thinking and thinking I was different than everybody else. I could have two wives and all that. And so I started to grow up, you know, and she only took about 3/4 of my pay. I think I went home with $68 at the end of the week if I worked 5 days. And work was slow, and I only worked 4 days, so I was going home with less than that. And I wasn't making it, so I moved to Florida because there's work down here. I moved to South Florida. And I did very good in South Florida. Most people run to Florida to get away from support. I ran to Florida so I could support them, you know? So AA was doing something for me, besides keeping me sober. South Florida AA was very much like New York. I had a lot of speaker meetings, and I got very active. And I don't know, AA saved my life. It gave me a life. I had no life before. You know, other people talk about their past. I didn't know how to swim. I didn't know how to dance. I didn't know how to do anything, you know, except sit in a bar and drink. And even to this day now, my wife will say something about, let's go on a cruise, you know. I wouldn't know what to do on a cruise. You know, I don't dance or anything like that. I just sit there and go to meetings and eat myself sick, you know. So we don't do anything, you know. We go to AA meetings. That's my life. So right now, I'm married to my third wife. I'm married to the first one 20 years before the divorce was final, the second one 25 years. And then I met Joni. And you heard her last week, so you know why I married her. You know? We went together I said, what the guy? We're shacking up for a while. And we moved to Claremont. I retired from my job and we moved to Claremont. I bought a motorhome. We were living in Claremont in a B's RV park. And we broke up for 9 months. We had a big battle and she left. And I always say, then she had the baby and we got back together again. But she didn't have no baby. You know what I missed? I missed, besides the normal things, I missed going to meetings with her, It was bothering me. We had a lot of conversations in the car, going to meetings, coming back. I used to love to listen to her at the meetings. And nobody could replace that. Nobody could, replace that in my life. So, in fact, when we broke up, I went back with my ex-wife, and that was a disaster. And she was a good girl, but she was, we did not belong together. And so we got together through the computer and the telephone, and she went back to her place in Pompano, in Margate, and I was living in Pompano with my ex-wife. So we used to see each other at meetings, and finally I said, I'm with the wrong woman. We gotta get back together. So we moved back to Claremont, and I told my wife and my ex-wife, and thank God we never did get remarried. And she understood, because things weren't the same. I wasn't happy, and she could see it. And so we got back together, and we got married, and best thing I ever did. So my life now is, what the hell time is it? I have trouble with the clock.
22.
Oh. 22. My life now is a lot different. We have a great life. I finally found somebody has something in common with me. She's a drunk like me, and she's crazy like me. And we do crazy things and say crazy things, and we also love the drunks. We love drunks. My first wife used to bitch at me that you'll do anything for a drunk, but you won't do anything for me. And that was true. That was what was happening. I was running all over the place, 12-step calls and all that stuff when I was new. And, and I loved it. And I go to a meeting, a 9 o'clock meeting, and come home at 3 o'clock in the morning. Because we stop in the diner after the meeting, me and six or seven other drunks, and we have another meeting, And that was the way AA was for me at the time. It really ruined my marriage, but I guess it had to end because I've never been happier than I am now. But one time in the old days, some of the things, the differences I see now is like it's so simple now. Then it's so complicated now. AA, they have big book study groups. I read the big book, and I'm a high school dropout, for God's sake, and I understood it. I don't know what the hell you got to study it for. But I understood everything they said, and it works. And I knew that. I never doubted. I read it one more time. It was about 7 or 8 years of sobriety, and I couldn't finish it. It was boring. I heard all this stuff before. Stayed in here. My sponsor used to tell me. I used to tell him I can't read the book because I fall asleep. And as soon as I turned the page, I forgot what I read. He says, "Don't worry about it. It stays in your head anyway." You might not remember it, but when you need it, it'll be there. And it was true. When I hear somebody quoting out of the big book, it was familiar. It wasn't like something new I heard, even 30 years later, So I went on a 12-step call. One Christmas Eve, I get a call, and a guy was in a pharmacy in Babylon. I lived in Central, I was living in Central Islip then. And I guess I was sober 4 or 5 years. And I called a guy I was sponsoring who lived near Babylon, and I said, meet me at Bates Pharmacy. There's a drunk there that needs help. And it's Christmas Eve. So we get there, and there's nobody there. So I asked the pharmacist. I said, was there a drunk hanging around here? He said, yeah, he was by the phone booth. But he left. He went that way. So we went that way, looking for him. And all of a sudden, I see a police car making a U-turn, and there's a guy in the back. And my pigeon said, that was another thing. We weren't sponsees, we were pigeons. And he says, I bet you that's the guy. So I turn, make a U-turn, I go after, I'm chasing a cop for a change. And he stops at the police station, and I pull up behind him, and he grabs his gun. He's getting out. And I said, wait a second. I said, is that a guy drunk in the car? He says, yeah, why? And I tell him we're in AA, and he called for help. He says, you want him? Take him. And he drove him out of the car. He puked all over himself and everything. I wasn't sober that long. That's right. It was about 3 years because I'm in my first new car. I never had anything new in my life. And I'm in my first new car, and he gets in the back and pukes all over that. And we didn't have places to take him like they do now. We called the Salvation Army. They had no room. So we had to take him to the Nut House, the Central Islip Hospital. They had a 28-day program there. It was voluntary. He had to sign himself in. This guy was incoherent. He was out of it. So we get him there, and the guy says, you can't sign him in. He's, I tell you what you do. I'll leave you here, and you talk to him and see if you can get him to sign the papers. He asked me what his name was. And he had a pack of cigarettes in his pocket and said, Duffy. So I said, his name is Joe Duffy. So he goes out of the room, and I signed Joe Duffy. And he's signed in now, Turned out his name was Patrick. I didn't know. But the reason he had cigarettes with his name on them, he got out of Pilgrim State Hospital that morning. And now he's back in Central Islip. So never seen Joe Duffy again or Patrick. Some of the experiences I had, some of the people I met, I loved AA. I loved the people, the fellowship of AA. I met more wacky people that were like me. And we had a guy in our group. He used to get hallucinations at night, and he kept hearing voices saying his name was Oscar, and let's kill Oscar tonight. They were always going to kill him. So, and he lived in a furnished room that was part of a bar. And so he went out and got a Doberman, and he put that in his room. And he figured if the dog growls or barks or anything, I'll know it's real. Because he knew he hallucinated, but he didn't know if these voices were hallucinations or were real. So the first night with the dog, he hears the voices. So we're going to kill Oscar tonight. And the dog ain't batting an eye. He's not moving. He figures the dog's in on it. That's the way I would have thought. I met a guy there. One of my experiences when I was drinking, I always owed money. Beneficial Finance was my best friend. Household Finance, I knew them all. In fact, my sponsor said something about having faith in this program, and you get hope, and then you help other people, which is charity. He says, easy way to remember, this is HFC. I knew HFC well. I was Household Finance Company. So one night I'm coming home, and I hear a car door slam. I pull in my driveway, I hear a car door slam, and this guy comes running at me. So I hit him. I knock him right on his butt. And he was from Beneficial Finance. I says, what's the matter with you? You crazy? And so I apologized for hitting him. But I said, man, I'm sorry, but you shouldn't run or chase people like that. So I go into AA, and there's a guy, he's got a dog that attacks when you say beneficial. Another guy like me. I mean, and the simple things that I heard in AA were what impressed me. The slogans were everything to me. The steps, I did the steps. I worked the steps. I work them every day, today. And, the guy that said, if you don't take the first drink, you can't get drunk. I thought this guy was a genius. I heard other people say, what a corny saying. I thought that was real genius, because it made sense. There was a guy in the Levittown group who used to say, in AA, we don't drink nothing, not even beer, and that made sense. Because I always thought beer was just mouthwash, and it did the job, but I never realized it was alcohol, I had so many experiences in AA, I can't count, I can't even think of them now, but there was so many things happened and that kept me interested. There was a guy I hung around with when I was in the program. I met him when I was new in the program, and he had been bouncing in and out of AA for 9 years, and they couldn't stay sober. We call him Wild Willie. And he'd go on drunk, and he'd come back with stitches in his face and purple on cheeks and, mice under his eyes and stuff like that. He always came back bad. And that's the way I drank. I didn't just drink. I had to get in trouble. I had a big mouth and a small body. And anyway, when I was leaving for Florida, I was sober 9 years, and Willie was still bouncing, he was still my friend, and he's still, that's another thing I noticed. I had a lot of friends that kept drinking in AA, you know, and it didn't change my feelings for them. I still, you know, they were still my friends. And I don't see the guys who are in and out hanging around as long as they did then. But anyway, while Willie, the night I was leaving, the night before I left, he said, you know, you come into AA, he said, it pisses me off. You come into AA and you latched on, you've been sober 9 years now, and I've been bouncing in and out for 18 friggin' years, and I can't get it. He said, I guess there's just no place for me in AA. I said, well, Willie, you know, they told me nobody comes here by mistake. So there's a place for you here, you're wanted here. I said, maybe your place is just to be a bad example, you know? And that was my last words to him. About a year later, I got a phone call from a guy I was sponsoring. And he says, guess who celebrated the year? Wild Willie. And he said, he quoted what you told him. He said, nobody knew what I told him. He said, a guy told me that my place in AA might be to be just a bad example. He says, you know, I'm sick of taking my lumps so that you people can stay sober. And that's just what he was doing. Because I told him, I said, you know, every time you go out drinking, I says, and come back, I know there's nothing out there I want, you know? So I remember this, I got thrown out of a bar, and I got very annoyed because I told him, I'm your best customer, you know? I used to spend at least $3 a day, and then I borrowed the rest. And, you know, for a buck, you could get drunk, you know, in them days. 15 cents a beer. The bartender bought back every second one. After the second one, you got one free. And so for a dollar, I could have 9 beers. That would hold me till long enough for another sucker to come in where I could borrow another dollar, you know? And I lost my train of thought. But that was my life. I lived a day at a time when I was drinking. You know, one day, I lived in tomorrow. I never lived in today. I always lived in tomorrow. And tomorrow I'm going to do this, tomorrow I'm going to do that. And nothing ever got done because tomorrow never came. By the time it came, it was today, you know? And I used to go in a bar and get drunk. If I had a dollar, it wouldn't matter if they were taking my house away from me. Once I closed them doors behind me, I didn't have no problems. I had an entry fee, I used to call it, my dollar, and I could stay there all day borrowing money. And so I was living a day at a time then. At the end of the day, I'd be in the car after they either closed or they threw me out, because I used to curse a lot. And the bar owner didn't like my language because there was women in there, and I used to tell them what I thought of them. And I'd be in the car, and I'd be thinking about all the rotten things I did, and I started hating myself. And next morning, I go in there, I talk to the bartender and tell him, that was my fourth step, I take the fifth step with him, and I tell him all the rotten things I did and how no good I was. And he'd say, no, Al, you're a perfect gentleman, you're okay. He used to throw me off for cursing, but I was a perfect gentleman. He'd wake me up in a bar, I'd be drooling all over the bar, and, you know, perfect gentleman, you know? And I was a sloppy, hopeless drunk. If I wouldn't have found AA, I'd still be, if I was alive, I'd still be there or I'd be in jail. Because, like I said, I had a big mouth. But my life, I couldn't explain what my life is like now. The one thing I lost in AA was, when I came into AA, was fear. I was so afraid of everything, and I was a tough guy. I mean, everybody thought I was a tough guy. I was scared of my own shadow, and that's why I was so tough. I had to put on the act, you know? And I got in a lot of fights. I lost a lot of them. I wanted to be a middleweight champ of the world. I took up boxing when I was 13 or 14 years old. I didn't become a middleweight until I was about 40, you know? I always wanted something I couldn't be, you know? Plus, I didn't like to train. I didn't, you know, to be any kind of athlete, you got to dedicate yourself to your sport. I could never dedicate myself to anything, not even my wife, and not even my own life. I drove like a maniac. I used to feel safe as long as I was drunk. I figure I'd black out and I'd get home. I was sitting in a bar one night, and I couldn't walk. I went to go to the men's room. I fell off the bar stool. I couldn't get my legs under me. So I crawled to the men's room and propped myself up. When I got back, I thought, how the hell am I going to drive home? I got about a 20-minute ride home. How am I going to get home? And it dawned on me that if I just stay here and keep on drinking, I'll wake up and find myself home. I mean, that's happened to me so many times. I Canada, and that's what happened. I came home one time with, my wife says to me in the morning, where the hell were you last night? I said, why? Go out and look at your truck. I thought, oh, Jesus, I hope I didn't smash it up or something, because I didn't remember nothing. And I go out and look at my truck, and there's a keep out sign hanging on the front bumper and about 150 feet of chain running down the street. I don't know where the hell that thing came from. These things happen regularly, and that's why I thought I was crazy. I really thought I was nuts. So I used to get rough with my wife and push her around a little bit too much, and that's what brought on the split up, and that's what brought me into AA. So I regret it, but I don't regret it because it got me here. Like I said, my life is so good now. Things happened. We just had an experience when we came down here. We moved to New Mexico. I mean, I lived like a guy that had money, and I don't have no money. We moved from Claremont. We had the motorhome. We moved from Claremont to New Mexico. Lived there for 13 years. I bought a house in the middle of the desert and complete solitude. We had no neighbors, and I loved it. Everybody said, he'll never make it. He's from the city. He's used to having people. I had people. I had Joni. And we had dogs, cats, cows, kangaroos. They were jackrabbits, but I used to think they were kangaroos. You could tell I was a city person. We sold that and made some money, bought another fifth wheel, sold that, and my wife had a heart attack. And we were living 84 miles from the hospital, so I figured we better get closer to town. So first we were going to go full-time RV, but she couldn't handle it. So I lost whatever I made on the house. I lost by buying. I lost $20,000 on the RV, and I had it 6 months. I had to get rid of it. So we moved to Las Cruces, lived there in a mobile home with the last of the money that I had. And I said, we'll never be able to move again. Because I bought it for cash, $14,000, and we'll never be able to move again. Somehow she gets the bug to move to Florida again after 5 years. And we had a good day, but I wanted to come back to Florida too. I seen the house prices were right in this area, and I thought, well, yeah, maybe we can do it. So I took a flight down here and looked at houses and bought a house. She'd never seen it. And you talk about, we say it must have been a sign. I really didn't have enough money. I had a few thousand dollars in the bank. I was figured I'd need at least 10% down. I got closing fees. How am I going to do it? I can't do it. They gave me a loan. They got me a loan from the USDA, Department of Agriculture. No money down, no closing fees, no nothing. I moved into that house with absolutely no money. So it must have been right. I would have never even tried it drunk. But things like that have been happening. I figured out my bills with the money we take in and the money that goes out. It never matches. I always spend more than I make, but we always make it. I don't know why. It's like God's working with us. I ran a business like that. I was losing money in every job. I must have made it up on volume because I ran it for 9 years and didn't make any money, but I was a big shot for 9 years, And that's amazing. All the things I wanted were no good for me. I wanted to be a fighter. It was no good for me. I wanted to be in business. I was a shitty businessman. So that was no good for me. I married a girl, a second wife, for food and shelter. She could cook and she had a house, so I married her. And, because I was starving to death and I was losing my apartment. So after I went broke in business, I went broke big time. I had a lot of men working. Real big shot, It didn't go to my head. I didn't become a big shot, but a lot of people thought I was. But they offered me a job as a plumbing inspector, and I hated plumbing inspectors. I said that was the last thing I ever wanted to be. But I had to take it because I had no choice. If I went to work for another plumber, I'd have to go in these supply houses that I just screwed out of thousands of dollars. So I didn't want to have to do that. And we did settle. I did pay them to their satisfaction. But best job I ever had in my life was a plumbing inspector. I worked there 9 years. I got a pension. That's why I can afford to do some of the things I'm doing now. You know, it's just I'm like that guy that believed in God, trusted God so much, and he was drowning. And the lifeboat came to save him, and the guy says, "Come on, get in the lifeboat." And he says, "No, save these other people. God will save me." And then the helicopter came over and says, "Come on, get on, get in." And he says, "No, no, save these other people. God will take care of me." And he drowned, you know. He says to God, when he got up there, he says, "I thought you were going to take care of me." He says, "Who the hell do you think sent the boat and the helicopter?" You know? But that's the way I was. The one thing I could do that was good for me, I didn't want, you know. I'll just tell you one little story. A guy come into AA. This is the end. A guy come into AA in Brooklyn, and he was a Bowery drunk, Skid Row drunk, and he joined this group. And he started doing good, and he got bored with himself. He was unemployable physically and everything, so he wanted something to do. So this group that he belonged to was in Brooklyn, worst street in Brooklyn, 30th, cruddiest street in Brooklyn, and there was an empty lot next door to the church, and it was all full of everybody's garbage and mattresses and stuff like that. So he got a hold of the priest that was running the church, and he says, "Would you mind if I cleaned up this lot next to you?" You know, it was the church's property. And the priest said, "I'd be thrilled if you did." He said, "In fact, all our tools, garden tools and everything are back there. Anything you need, you ask me." So the guy started working on this thing every day. And God, first they got rid of all the garbage. Then he started planting bushes and stuff. People started donating bushes for him, flowers and grass, sod. And within a year, he had the place looking like the garden spot of Brooklyn, you know? So the bishop heard about it, and he wanted to see what's going on there. So he went down there and walked by, and there's old Joe out there working with his, doing his gardening. And the bishop says, "But isn't it wonderful what God and man can do when they work together?" And Joe says, "Yeah, you should have seen this place when he was taking care of it by himself." And that's the AA program. You get things beyond your fondest dreams. All you got to do is just do the best you can, one day at a time, and it'll happen. And don't worry. Jesus Christ, worry is the biggest slap in the face to God. It shows you don't trust him, you know? And I did amazing things, like with this business. And I had a $10,000 a week payroll and a $10,000 a month overhead. I seen weeks where I had $300 in the bank a day before payday, and I said, "I ain't gonna worry," you know. And I never bounced a check. I don't know how. Money just kept coming in dribs and drabs, just enough to pay. There's never nothing there for me, but my wife was working. But I don't know. I refused to worry. And my first wife, that started right away in AA. My wife says, "You're really working the program good." She says, "You don't worry about nothing anymore," you know? And I never worry about nothing when I was drinking, you know? But I didn't physically, but up here I did. I drove myself crazy. But anyway, that's my story, and I'll stick by it. And I highly recommend AA to anybody. I've been in this thing 50 years. I never thought I'd do that with a bunch of goddamn people who don't drink. I don't know how I lasted this long. But thank you very much for having me.
Good job. Thank you. Okay, guys, I'll turn this off.
I thought you were going to shut up.